Hello, Internet. This is ESE Insight calling. I'm Ewan Spence.
I'm Finn Ross Russell.
And I'm Ben Robertson.
And we're kind of digitally online rehearsals. Oh, Eurovision has started. Coming up, who is on the stage today? Remember, it's rehearsals, and everything's just gone a little bit bigger. Yes, good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Welcome back to ESE Insight. We had a podcast yesterday. We have a podcast today. What's going on? It's pretty simple. We're into the daily coverage now as the rehearsals are underway in their Ahoy Theatre in Rotterdam. Of course, they've been going on since April the 28th with the stand-in rehearsals, so the camera angles can be tested, the AR effects can be tested, your best impression of Iron Man can be tested, all before the delegations arrive on the ground and have a go. Yeah, have a go. That seems fair because they've not been on the stage yet. They might have taped it out in their studios at home, but now they get to go out and we get to watch them in this new wonderful digital online hybrid environment. 500 press available on the ground, 1,000 press watching online, and the Insight team are in the latter category. But joining us first of all, Finn Ross Russell. Welcome, Finn. First day in the digital press. How did it feel?
Surreal. I mean, for this to be my first day in the Eurovision Press Centre in general and to not be in the room is really interesting, but nonetheless equally cool.
Welcome to the first day in what could be a brand new way of covering the Eurovision Song Contest. Ben, you did the similar thing, of course, at Melody Festival, and much as everybody's looking forward to go back to the Melody Festival in press room next year, you still reckon there's going to be a digital component now going forward forever, really?
I would like to think so. I mean, the digital revolution that's happened because of the nature of this pandemic has led to so many more opportunities. If you look at the wider world beyond Eurovision, so many big companies are thinking, you know, let's have people come into the office 2-3 days a week rather than the standard 9-to-5. This flexibility is going to be with society going forward, and I certainly expect that, no, for some people, being there in person, doing the jobs there, it is better. But for some people and for some roles, it's not needed in terms of carbon. I notice when you log in, you get a carbon footprint. You've saved this many kilograms of CO2. It's not worth it to the time it takes as well to travel and so forth. So I think this hybrid solution's probably here to stay across all society.
So we're obviously going to be talking a little bit about that over the next 2 weeks or so as we cover that. But what's more important, of course, is the songs and the performances. So later on in this podcast, we're going to go into a little bit more depth on one or two issues. But for now, let's just quickly remind ourselves who was on stage. Opening up with the group and Lithuania. Ben, what we saw when we came out of the national finals is essentially what we saw here.
It is. Although the one thing I really picked out was how all of the band members of the group are just that extra slightly bit more dramatic. The facial expressions are just a little bit more turned on. It's that little bit more kookiness. They've certainly, this is our thing. We're going to absolutely ham it up. And I don't think that's a bad decision. I certainly like how they've also got the different cameras acting different band members during the songs. A nice touch. If you think back to Lake Moale for a similar idea of what happened there. It works well, but it is 99% the national final performance.
Second up on stage, we had Amen from Anna Sokolic singing for Slovenia.
Yeah, I mean, this was very, very similar to the original video that we were introduced to, with some interesting bits of light coming through at different points, interesting things going on with the staging, and of course, we have a slightly new cut of the song coming, which we didn't get a full picture of, but definitely some interesting stuff bubbling away down in that second slot for Slovenia.
Third up on the stage, we had Russia with Manisha's Russian Woman. Ben!
I mean, what Russia have done, they've got Manisha in this huge, big dress of all the different fabrics, and then she just pops out of it. It's like the little Russian doll. It's brilliant. I wish there was more of it. I want more Russian doll from Russia. Brilliant, and it's empowering. It's the backdrop is the most impressive and bold of all of them we've had today. It's, I think, universally from what I've gathered, because in this online press room, you can see people's reactions, people are chatting away. Russia's the one that stood out as a general rule. If we were in the press centre, we would have heard some cheering, I think.
Yeah, and I do love the symbolism there of taking the very traditional Russian materials, a Russian look, and then, nope, Russian women are... we've left that behind. Following that, it was on to Sweden, Tusse and Voices.
Malfest, copy, paste, bring to stage, run three times, do it fairly succinctly and polished. Next.
Just feel really comfortable. Everything's cooking on gas. That's fine. Following that, of course, Australia isn't with us on the ground in Rotterdam. North Macedonia popped up after that one with Vasil going on Here I Stand.
I don't think I've enjoyed a rehearsal in such a long time than this. I was just like, yes! Because it's the most ridiculous piece of cheese I've seen since, what, maybe Cake to Bake era. And the moment, and it's the perfect photograph is being shared. You will all see it, I'm sure. Vasil has a huge glitter waistcoat that explodes. And yes, if you have any Malfest knowledge, then you will get the Dotter reference there. The picture is exactly the same as Dotter's, basically. The same symbolism. It doesn't come across quite as well on stage. I think because Dotter was moving, so the lights were more organic. But as a weird, I've said all the way through, this is the kind of thing that I think weirdly might be more televote than jury, despite Vasil's great timbre of voice. It's an interesting one, but we'll discuss it more, I'm sure, but it's so empty because it's just him. Just him on the stage.
And finishing up the rehearsals for today was Leslie Roy for Ireland, and the thing that was never been seen on the Eurovision stage before, coming from RTE.
It's the type of thing that either you're going to absolutely love or it's going to absolutely drive you up the wall. The closest thing I think we can do to sort of describing what it is Greta in 2016 for Iceland in terms of the sort of interaction with various shadows and darkness bits and pieces. But it's very interactive. It's very engaging. And I have a feeling it's going to be very Marmite.
Yeah, I think... If you want to go back even further, it's like what we've got is the old-fashioned matte painting. So there's some props that are very small that the camera's shooting through. Leslie's behind them, a little bit further away, so you get a sort of false perspective effect. Now, in the old days, you would just paint that on a bit of glass, hold it in front of that, and go, see, look, Charlton Heston, Egypt, hey! But now, of course, you can use movement or props. There's a little bit of puppeteering going on here as well. And it is visually different from everything else that we saw today. But there again, I think everything did stand out today. North Macedonia stood out for its own visual reasons. Russia did. You know, there was a huge blast of colour that you were getting from Slovenia was standing out. The rope with the fancy hands and the purple and yellow. Everyone was able to stand out on the stage. And yeah, there's a lot we could talk about. There's a lot of minute detail, but this is actually going to lead into our first talking point, which means I need to go. Now we're going to tell everybody to remember that these are still the rehearsals. Play a jingle. Remember, everybody, these are just the rehearsals. So, yes, Ben, how many times and how many Eurovisions have we said it's the first run through? Calm yourself down.
Well, actually, it's technically for us today, it was the second run through, because the very, very first run through on the stage, the cameras were off. So if the rehearsals started at 10 o'clock, we didn't see anything until about 10:15, 10:20 normally, because they'd go through the once, they'd check things through, and then we'd get to see a copy of it. But then this will be changed and altered. Certainly every single one of them, even Sweden, has camera things to tighten. We'll see it again in a few days' time. I think we're on Wednesday for these songs coming back.
Yes.
And then after Wednesday, there'll be more tweaks. They'll go back to a viewing room. And then you'll have hopefully a finished product for the dress one on the Monday. But even after that, it could be the most one or two smallest details changing. So you do have an evolution. You have the themes. You generally have the costumes. You generally have the props. Sometimes you take them away if it's not working, but yes, you can read too much into it if you're expecting that perfect Melfest perfection, something that maybe had never been on a stage before.
Yeah, I mean, I think the important thing to remember with this being the first day of rehearsals is that everybody was solid. And I think at the end of the day, that's the most that we as journalists, as people following the contest, can really hope for and want in these artists. I remember back in 2017 on the equivalent first day in rehearsals, Blanche had a bit of a shaky rehearsal and the internet just collapsed with everybody saying, oh, City Lights isn't going to do as well as we thought. And it finished fourth in the grand final. These all need to be taken with a pinch of salt. And I think the important thing is everybody seemed confident with the circumstances around COVID and being in the arena and on being on that stage and their performances. And that's all that we can really want from them.
There is still a contest. There is still an element here. And one of the things that I like to watch out for here is not the mistakes and flubs. It's how much work there still needs to be done. And I think the obvious the two choices here are comparisons between Sweden and between Ireland. Sweden is pretty much there. They're just, you know, they might tweak some camera angles. They might use an extra rehearsal to maybe try. I think, Finn, you were saying early in our live chat, you know, get rid of some of the side shots because they worked at Melfest and they didn't work here. Whereas Ireland has got to work a lot more on the timing, tightening up the angles, getting the positioning and the rhythm so this forced perspective and matte painting comes through on the television. So Ireland have more to do in terms of to get up to that sort of level of performance, whereas Sweden can be a little bit less. And, you know, if we look at all of them in that sense, all of them were... That's where I think Ireland had to have the worst thing out of the songs that we've seen today. Everybody else felt pretty close to final product. Ireland still needs to go through a little bit more.
I think the thing with that, though, is that very few of the other nations that we saw today have taken the kind of risks that the Irish delegation have taken with staging this song. And I think that's okay, because with potential high risk comes potential high reward. And I do think this is the kind of staging where if people at home get the concept and it works in terms of how it's performed and how the camera angles get it and how Leslie does it on semi-final night, I am beginning to get more and more convinced that this will qualify for the grand final, which I wasn't necessarily before today. But as we're also saying, if this doesn't work, it will really go down in a blaze of glory and it'll look very, very messy.
And I think all of us, in terms of ESC Insight, we love our Eurovision to be one or the other, to take those kind of risks, to tell those kind of stories. That whole risk element that we discussed, though, I don't know if this is a thing because I've not been at Eurovision on the ground since 2017, but I noticed so many of the vocalists today, and I'm in a different era, really holding back on their vocal. Maybe letting one or two notes become a full, like, crescendo. But otherwise, like, you know, people like Vasil, people like Tussin, I've noticed it's had some... A voice operation the last couple of weeks, but everybody seemed to be like just playing it back. Manitza, without the audience around, they didn't have quite the adrenaline that certainly the national final performance I've watched many times had. Is that more normal now, Ewan, in a sense that, you know, people are more conservative, people know it's the long-term game, you don't have to go out full blazing on that first run through?
It's a really good question, because I'm trying to remember 2019 and it's just like I can't remember anything about 2019, let alone Eurovision 2019. It's just like there's something stopping me going back further in my mind on that one. But, you know, what I do know is that even then we were talking about you are playing a long game. You should be keeping it through. Finn, you've done a lot of work in stage and theatre. It's like you never show the top of your range at a rehearsal, do you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the other thing that we have to consider in the context of this being a competition is that other delegations are watching these rehearsals in the same way that we are. And if the crux of your performance is, this is this massive note we go for, or this is a pyro curtain that we show, you really don't want to be showing your hand until the last possible moment, which of course is part of the risk and part of the how do you play the politics of the rehearsals during the context. But, sorry, the rehearsals during the contest, but I genuinely am excited by the way that these politics are unfolding, because it makes it more interesting for us. It means that rather than us being given the full package on day one, we get eked out a bit more, a bit more, a bit more, until we see what this looks like on semi-final night. And it makes it interesting. It's a process, and we have still quite a lot of time before we actually get to it's competitive and there are points on the line and there's 10 spots in the grand final up for grabs. And therefore, there's still a lot of room to not show everything. I think it's partially psychological. It's partially, you know, this is the package that we know that we've got, and these are the things that we can do that are really going to highlight that package. And particularly when we talk about this first semi-final this year, it's very, very competitive. And there are, no matter how you slice it, going to be some good songs that get left behind. And so to that end, every detail, every note, every element that you bring to the staging, it all counts, and it's all important.
I've always saying with the Eurovision Song Contest that 99% of what you actually do and your success and your chances is the song and the preparations and the routine and the camera work that you plan beforehand. But then at the same time, 99% of it is the actual 3 minutes on stage. You can have everything there, but if you don't deliver that on, you know, in this case, the Monday and Tuesday night next week, it doesn't go anywhere. You have to actually still step up and deliver live and actually convince people, hey, vote for me. And there's an element of like the scientific and the artistry and the planning, but there's the emotional connection, which it's so personal, but good artistry is that. More than anything else that exists. You can't get a computer to write a Eurovision song despite Sweden's attempts.
I do want to talk a little bit about the scale of things, though. And let's go for the Roop on this one, because I think it's a great way of illustrating it. They came through the national final with their performance of Discotheque, and they've brought a very similar performance of Discotheque to the Ahoy Theatre. But Ben, they're on a much bigger stage now, and how you fill that bigger space is a really big question, and one of the big impacts on how you're going to look on camera. How do you not get lost? How do you make sure that you're in a big space but you still fill a TV screen at home when you need to? And also, how do you translate small intimate performances up to that big stage? Because the Roop can do intimate very well, as we saw back in the Lithuanian Nationals. But now they've got to bring it to big.
Yes, but if we look through it again, we still see the performance that is elementally the same. There is the same dance routine. It is the same walks, pretty much, except for the last 30 seconds, where there's a great camera shot where the camera is right in the face of the lead singer and the two backers as they walk around. And the lights, actually, is almost like a confetti effect of the lights on the Roop, which is very effective. You need to make it tighter, but that's the recap shot there. You have an act here which is to fill the space. Isn't about having all five of them on the screen at the same time. It's to fill the emotional space. You need to connect to, oh, what is that crazy, almost ginger-haired dancer doing with his like arms around his head and swiveling? And you need to see like the facial interactions going on with that. You need to connect to the people that are there. And yes, there are big wide shots. You do see a very impressive backdrop effect that's happening. But you don't vote for a backdrop. You vote for, you'll vote for the one doing the silly hand gesture or making the eyebrow movements, or having the catchy song, which this certainly is. That's what you need to do. So you need to balance out, wow, what a spectacle, with, look at me. Engage with me.
I think the other thing to remember as part of this process is, for the first time in sort of in-arena Eurovision history, we know that we are not going to have a full audience. In fact, actually, we're going to have a marginally full audience. And so the added challenge that all these delegations have is, how do you take the fact that you are performing in a mostly empty arena and still make it feel exciting and vibrant, particularly for the songs that are very upbeat, much like Lithuania? I actually really liked what the Roop did with this, because they've kept all the things that they know people love about Discotheque and about this performance, and they've added a few little extra tweaks and elements with the camera angles and the staging that have just made it feel a little bit more engaging, that makes it feel a little bit more like they are performing to you. And I think in the context of everything that we've discussed so far on this podcast, you can't underestimate the value of not only that audience engagement where you feel like the artist is getting their message across to the audience, but also where the performance is feeling fresh and it's feeling exciting, and where you can tell they are loving it just as much as you are loving listening to it at home.
And that, Finn, is probably where we bring Russia into this as well, because Manesha really did manage to bring the energy, and the she really sold the costume change. Let's call it the costume change, because that's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, what a costume. This is so big and so bold, and it's a clear imagery in terms of what she's trying to get across. It's so obvious that it's trying to make a point, even though you don't understand the lyrics and you don't necessarily understand what she's saying. The message comes across really nicely. And the thing that I guess I really didn't expect with this performance is that Russia have really made use of the technology on offer. Russia have turned a lot of heads today, and I am really, really impressed by what they have brought to these rehearsals.
It's generally thought, and I would agree with the idea that, you know, Russia had the best rehearsal today. The one thing, though, based on this topic of size and scale, is that actually this works much better in a tighter, noisier environment. Performing this to 3,500 Dutch fans, who will be sitting at least 50, 60 meters away from the stage, won't give it the, like, more than anything, this song needs right close contact with its audience. And it's a bit of a shame that the way the world is has meant that we're not getting that for this performance here. Yes, is it coming across down the camera? Is Manitza giving this, cheek is the wrong word, but this just full of expression, full of, yeah, I've got a story, I'm going to tell it to you, you're going to listen to me character, which is exactly what you want. But I don't know, I want more noise, I want something to give her goosebumps while she's performing it, and I don't think the audience will get on Monday, Tuesday, next week will give that to her.
That's, of course, where camera angles can come in, because it's not just choosing where to point the camera, it's how to point the camera, your focus, your pulls, your zooms, your positioning. So you can get, close off the space with the camera while it's still in the same place. And the performer, and that, again, it's a rehearsal. These are all the sort of things that can be layered through and discussed with the camera director. And when it comes back again in 4 days' time, then we shall see the changes that have been made. And again, like Vin was saying, that's some of the cards that you can play. It's like we're going to play around with the depth of field now and go through from that one as well. I think also let's just finish off with Vasil, who is just standing in the middle of the stage. I didn't see much movement from him. I saw the movement coming from the camera. But yeah, that's memorable performance.
It does the imagery, it does the what it's trying to get across perfectly. And I think the thing with Vasil and the way that they've put this performance together is that they're clearly trying to get the most of this emotion and the energy of this performance out. But you sort of wonder, with things like the sort of disco ball jacket, who exactly are they trying to appeal to? Are they trying to sort of get that jury vote on their side and get people really impressed by his soaring vocals and the way that he delivers them and the passion that he gives it? Or is he trying to sort of wow and amaze people in the televote? I mean, I guess technically at Eurovision, you're trying to do both. But I almost get a sense that he's trying to sort of do not enough of either, and I'm slightly concerned as to what that's going to mean for this act going into the shows.
An interesting point there, you discussed the jury and televote. This year, there's so many songs that have been internally selected, and Vassal's been very open about the process for him to write and produce this song. And I think for so many of this year's artists, yes, Eurovision's a competition, but actually there's a lot of things that are greater than the competition. And you get that with internal selections. Hey, here's my art. Let me show what I want to be. And I think the iconic moment when the glitter chest is revealed, that's just Vasil doing what he wants to do and just standing there and shining for 10 minutes. I mean, on some of the scale, Ewan, let's go for a technical point here. In the first chorus of Vasil's song, at least on this run through today, you have basically a 30-second shot of Vasil chest upwards, and it's completely still. Now, we've had songs where you zoom in and you zoom out on like one frame of motion, but I can't think of one unless it's like, you know, a planted camp. No, I can't think of one. I can't think of one in this era of Eurovision where you just have one camera pointing at an artist. It lets Vasil tell a story, lets his musical theatre side come through, but it relies on that. And I don't know if it's a benefit or a hindrance here. It's an interesting take.
It's very rare for the camera to stay still at the song contest. I mean, my immediate thought was when you're doing long camera shots, well, that's conceited verse, isn't it? But the point of that opening shot there was it was like 45 seconds, and it played with height. It played with push in and push out. It played with, are you above or below the eye line? Here it was locked off. It was just like, there you go. Do that. Now, part of that is so you can get the special effect running through and to get the angles correct in that. But yeah, the other one is there is, well, what's Vassal's strength? Standing on stage and connecting. Well, why don't we just let him do that and not play around and fiddle with it? Let's just put that through. I'd be very interested to know if they'd run test shots of it in a different way, because one of the things that you can do at rehearsals is try two or three ideas. So maybe this was the run through where it was the static shot. Maybe there's another shot where we're going to do a slow zoom in from the back of the auditorium. Maybe there's another one where they're spinning around him in a steady cam, socially distant steady cam, possibly on a wire. So the fact that we've seen that here in the rehearsals doesn't necessarily mean that that will make it all the way through. That could just be, we need to run through some cuts to have them on the computer so we can compare them at the end of the stage time, where they go into a viewing room and can watch all of these clips and change the camera shots, decisions and movements as well. It's a rehearsal. That's what they're there for.
I think yes to all of that, but I also think, as we've explored with a lot of the performances today, it's about the storytelling. It's about what is the story that is being put across in these performances. And with a lot of them, you know, Sweden, Lithuania, Ireland, it may be a bit clunkier or more efficient in some parts based on how competent they are with the performance at this moment, but ultimately you're clear on what the story is. Even though this is a musical theatre song that should lend itself really nicely to some form of storytelling, and we within the community have a lot of the context that allows us to sort of fill in the blanks on that story, I don't feel like that story is being sold well enough. And I feel like that's the challenge that the delegation is going to have over the next few days in preparation for their semi.
And so there we go. It's our run through the first day on the Ahoy Theatre stage for this year's Eurovision Song Contest. Yes, it's been a weird route to get here. And yes, things are different and we're online and we're scattered all over Europe. But you know what? Things have changed, but things are still staying the same. I think we have to say from that one. Ben, we still have the press room in a different form, but the form that we all love. There are still tech difficulties on day ones. There's still fun with the press conferences. And as Charlene has written in the notes here, we're still having a diet largely consisting of tea and coffee and not much else. The more things change at Eurovision, Ben, the more things stay the same.
Yes, I'm going to investigate this a little bit more for EAC Insight itself, I'm actually going to do some interviews after we speak now with people in the press centre to try and work out what the similarities and differences are. Have an article on that in the next couple of days, hopefully. Because I'm fascinated to know what the atmosphere is like there. Because the press centre is usually a very noisy, bubbly, frantic place, and one assumes it's not going to be quite like that in the world we are now. So I'm quite interested to see how that mood is, and then the spin-off of that is, does that impact on the song contest and the delegations and the artists getting their story heard?
And Finn, for you, of course, there's no other reference point, I suppose, at least not at Eurovision.
I don't know what I'm missing, which maybe is a good thing, or maybe it puts me at a slight disadvantage. But I guess what it does mean is that I'm able to go into this rehearsal process with a fully fresh blank slate, which I guess allows me to sort of enjoy and appreciate the magic of what this process is and the build up to the live shows a little bit more.
Indeed, yeah. And for all of you out there listening to the podcast, we're going to play with format as well. We're not quite sure how we want the daily podcast to actually run through over the next 2 weeks. So what we've done is we've picked out a couple of themes for this show along with the songs, rather than just do a straight song by song by song by song by song. There'll be plenty of time to do that when we come to preview the actual semi-finals and finals. But for now, this is our half hour for today. Your comments are always welcome back at the website, escinsight.com, and you can support us at patreon.com/escinsight as well. But until then, thank you very much for listening, and thank you also to the team that have joined me here on the podcast. First of all, Finn Ross Russell.
Pleasure as always.
And Ben Robertson.
Thank you, Ewan.
So with that, we will go and put the coffee pots into the dishwasher and get ready for another day of attending the press room at the same desk that I've always sat at for the last year at the Eurovision Song Contest. Isn't it lovely to be back? Today's EAC Insight podcast was hosted by Ewan Spence with Finn Ross Russell and Ben Robertson. Find out more at www.eacinsight.com.